Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on a not really flurry anymore, but certainly cold Monday morning here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. I'm excited. I have so many people in the studio right now. We'll see. Keeping it organized will be the most difficult part of this first interview as we talk to people from the Blue Spring City Theater later on in the show, and you'll want to stay tuned for this. Yiddish vaudeville. Yes. We'll actually have a Yiddish vaudeville person in the studio. Well, he will explain the whys and wherefores and talk about the humor and the background of Yiddish vaudeville right here on the Arts Magazine Show. But first, let's journey out to Blue Springs, where they're doing The Jungle Book, adapted by Monica Flory, based on stories by Rudyard Kipling. And with us to tell us about it, one, two, three, four, five, at least six people here from today. First being the director, Michelle Brown, is with us. She's been with us before. When you directed, what did you direct before that caused you to be here?
Lost and Foundling.
That's right. I remember that now. Yeah. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
You took on Jungle Book now and 30 young people.
We have a cast of 30. They range in age from 3 to 18. And some new faces, some old faces. It's a great collection of kids.
What made you want to direct this particular play?
My son is 14, and he's trying to figure out his place in the world. And Mowgli in this production is really trying to figure out if he fits in the jungle with his adopted wolf family or if he needs to return to his human family in the man village.
I see. Well, let me tell you, though, even people in their 60s are still sometimes trying to find their way in the world. That goes throughout your life, CJ. CJ is with us. He plays the role of Mowgli. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Is this a role you sought out with your every breath?
No, not really.
No, okay.
I just, when I audition for a play, I don't really care which role I get.
Oh, sure.
As long as I get to participate. Lead role, that's awesome.
You have a future
that
as
would
a
be
diplomat.
Great.
You have a future as a diplomat or maybe a lawyer. No, you wanted the people, they say they don't. They want the lead role, of course.
Yeah.
No, of course. Okay. More with you in a second. Patty Barris is the assistant director. She is with us as well. What's your biggest challenge in this? The big cast, you help the director, you assist the director, but with that many, do you feel kind of like a ringmaster at times?
I do. I do. I feel like the kid wrangler. Make sure they're all stay in tow and listen and be quiet so the director can do her stuff.
Yeah, I've heard people tell me, they say, well, directing grade school kids is difficult. Directing high school kids is even more difficult. The grade school kids want to play around with each other. The high school kids also want to play around with each other, but in a different way. But the middle school ages are probably the easiest.
They are. I think they are. But they're all a great, great bunch of kids.
Yeah.
They really are.
Well, good luck. Good luck. Do you bring a whip and a chain?
No.
No? Okay.
No, okay. We don't need that.
Michelle is the director. You know, people have probably seen the movie, things like that. But you told me earlier this was a little bit different than the movie.
This is much truer to the Rudyard Kipling stories. It's not a musical. It sticks to the original cast of characters pretty much that was in Rudyard Kipling's books. There's no King Louis, no jazz. It's pretty much a straight story. It has comedy. It has tears. And it has one part where the young lady who plays Shere Khan the tiger, the other night I had to actually get up and walk out because she creeped me out so bad and she was so scary. I had to, like, step out for a minute.
Oh, really? Creeped out the director?
She did.
I've had directors tell me they were creeped out before, but for different reasons than that.
No, she just did so good being the scary, overpowering tiger, and it just was like, okay, got to have a minute.
Okay, when you cast, did you go by age, look? Do you look for something deeper than that?
We went by look, and during the auditions, we had the kids pretend they were different animals for us that were in the show. And they had to be able to physically manifest that character. And the kids who could do it got those parts.
Wow. Yeah, so you, did you have them actually pantomime out there?
We did.
The characters are all animals?
There are only two human characters in the story. So we have wolves, we have, they're called the kites. They're an African bird, and the kites kind of serve as narrators. We have a panther, a bear, monkeys, and then the tiger, and a jackal.
And a snake.
Are the animals representing things? Is that the way it's supposed to be?
I think they probably represent different facets of human nature and different temptations for Mowgli as to why he should stay one place or go the other.
Yeah. Kipling was big on the jungle, India, his other stories, you know, Gunga Din, things like that. Yeah. And he often wrote in that way. The animals would be representatives of other things that he didn't feel like he could really talk about in other ways.
Yeah.
But that's how it's set up in this story. Now, C.J. Miller plays the role of Mowgli. Tell me about, and the audience, pretend that we don't know anything. So tell us about your character and how he fits in the story.
Well, Mowgli is basically a child that was sort of abducted by a tiger, but not really in a way. He found his own way to a wolf pack, and that wolf pack just took care of him, and they had a choice of eating him or taking care of him.
Okay, which did they pick?
They took care of him.
Okay.
And so they basically just have to teach him the laws of the jungle and life lessons and how he's supposed to survive in the jungle.
And the law in the jungle being survival of the fittest?
Yes.
That sounds kind of cruel, doesn't it?
Yes, but that's probably how the jungle works.
Well, I'm sure it does.
Eat or be eaten.
It's like that in real life, too. But you're getting into the role?
Yeah. I don't know. It's really kind of difficult the way that kind of his personality will kind of change throughout the show, and so will his age. Like at the very beginning, you'll get a 3-year-old Mowgli, then you'll get like an 11-year-old, and then you'll get a 13-year-old. And it's just in that short hour and 30 minutes that you just go kind of through the life of a preteen and a teenager.
Well, that's very observant of you. How does he change?
His attitude, basically. In the beginning, he's like, well, these are stupid lessons that I'm being taught. I don't need to know this. I mean, I can grow up all by myself because I'm a wolf. And then towards the end, he's kind of like, oh, wait, I'm not as much of a wolf as I think I am. I act more like a human than a wolf. But I still have family in the pack and in the village. So once he, towards the end, he decides, well, either I stay with the wolf pack or I go to my own place.
Now, you see now how the parallels with real life can be with that? Isn't it really like that? Well, you don't know yet. You will. Like that. In real life. Now, does he have this right, Michelle?
Yeah, he does. And it's real interesting to see the progression through the show of how Mowgli changes and really grows up and finds his place. And it's interesting to see how the other kids in the cast have reacted to how Mowgli's decision affects them and their role in the jungle, too.
Okay, now who do we have up next here?
I am a kite.
Okay, what's your name?
Victoria.
Okay, Victoria McGuire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I am a narrator, and I talk to some of the characters in the play. I'm on Mowgli's side, and other times we all think he needs to go back to the village and he doesn't belong in the jungle. And sometimes we're like, Mowgli should stay here, but other times we say he should go back to the village. So.
Michelle mentioned it earlier, but a kite is a bird.
It's got a really long wingspan. It's kind of like an eagle-type bird.
As if a kite that you would fly in the sky.
Yeah.
Okay. And you kind of help facilitate the story?
We kind of keep it moving along a little bit by kind of progressing the story from when he's a small child to when he's grown up to 13 and stuff.
Sure. So, is this a part that you enjoy doing?
Yes. This is probably one of my favorite plays I've done.
Did you get to play because I'm assuming you're a really good reader?
I guess, probably.
She's a very good flyer. She the kites have to make it look like they're flying on stage, and we don't have a fly system, so they have to do it physically with their bodies, and she did a great job.
Yeah.
Still does.
Do you think bird as you're doing that?
Yeah. I think of, like, when I'm in ballet or something, and you have to move gracefully and be kind of not real, like, jerky and stuff.
Sure. Smooth and
smooth,
graceful.
Yes,
and
smooth.
Yeah, well, that's something that has to be worked on, of course. What about the narration? I'm assuming you're a good reader. You pretty much have to be the narrator.
Yes, because you have to be able to read what you're supposed to be telling the person and get into how you're supposed to say it to that character, like what you are feeling while you're saying it.
Exactly. So. Good. And you've been well coached on this. Yeah, the narrators play a big part, don't they, Michelle?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, who do we have up next? In the middle chair.
I am Caitlin. I play a wolf. Yeah.
Caitlin Barris, you play the wolf. Now, we think of the wolf as a negative character. Is the wolf in this story a negative character?
We're not negative. We're just trying to find what's, like, suits Mowgli. Like, should he be back in the village where he stands or be in the jungle with his adopted family?
Yeah, the wolf fits into the story in what ways?
They're the caretakers.
Caretakers.
Yeah.
Oh, so like one of the superiors that keep things running?
They're the ones who are responsible for keeping Mowgli safe as he's growing up, which isn't, you're right, it's not the usual stereotype we put with wolves.
Uh-huh.
But then Caitlin's particular wolf character later on also is responsible as a caretaker for Akela, the elder wolf. As she's getting too old to take care of herself, Caitlin's character helps to take care of her as well. And so you see that the wolves are caring all across the lifespan, and they are truly a family.
Sure, sure. Now, you came in makeup. Is that because mm-hmm. you were on Channel 41 earlier?
Yes. We always have that makeup so our faces pop and we go with the character.
I see. Well, when you have that makeup on, do you feel more wolf-like?
I feel like a wolf right now. I just
want to rip my throat out.
Yeah, makeup brings out the character's personality and everything.
Yeah, does the wolf change throughout the story? Does the wolf change? I mean, more of a protector, more aggressive?
Yes.
More.
Like first she was like, oh, he, like, needs to go, like, be away. And then, like, I turn out to, like, see what he really is and that he wants to stay, but he obviously goes.
Yeah, is the wolf pack position that he needs to evolve and change?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you try to facilitate that happening more?
Kinda. Like,
I think that the wolves are, it's like a family where as the child grows up, you want to keep them close, but you realize they need to go. And the smallest wolf at the end of the show does a short narration about how Mowgli goes, but he still stays in touch with the pack. And I think that's kind of what every parent really wants for their child. They want them to go out into the world, but they want them to stay in touch and connected to the rest of the family.
Yeah, so that's how you look at it?
Yeah.
Okay, Caitlin. Well, any special challenges other than being a wolf?
Well, it's challenging getting to know different things because I want to be, like, a really good actor when I grow up, like, for college and, like, everything. And I just, like, think this is such a good show, and I think everyone should go see it. It's amazing. It's so much fun.
Performances begin this Friday, March 7th at 7:30 p.m. Continue on Saturday the 8th at 7:30, a matinee on Sunday the 9th at 2 o'clock p.m. Then the next weekend, I guess normally in the past they've done Thursday shows, Not so this time, Friday the 14th at 7:30, but two shows on Saturday the 15th, both at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and Saturday the 15th at 7:30 in the evening, followed up by a matinee on Sunday afternoon the 16th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Blue Springs City Theater, located at 2000 Northwest Ashton Drive. It's on the campus of Blue Springs High School, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the same Blue Springs High School that won the football championship this year. The number to call for more information is 816-228-0134, and you can also go to their website and make arrangements there as well. BluespringsCityTheater.com for the Blue Springs City Theater production of The Jungle Book, which is opening again this Friday, March the 7th. Thank you for being with us. Who is next?
I am Evie.
Evie, yes. I told you earlier I had an aunt, Evie, so I can remember your name. Grasinski.
Yeah, I kind of split it into three parts.
Yeah, she did. She had to do that for me. Grasinski, you play a bird.
I do play a bird.
That's different from a kite.
No, it is the kite.
Okay.
It is the kite. I think that our characters kind of may be the oldest, kind of, because they know all about the jungle law and they've memorized it a lot. Because throughout the story, they always talk about, like, that something that goes with the story is, like, laws of the jungle always help a friend in need when something happens where you need to help a friend. So, they kind of, like a lawyer.
Kind of. Yeah, I know.
They kind of get to say, you have to do this, you have to do that.
Is the law of the jungle more cruel than
the law we're interested in? No, it's not.
No?
It's kind of helps you through a lot of life lessons, like, not a brave heart is something you really need. Like, you have to be ready.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of good. It's not all cruel.
Yeah. Well, tell me about your character. What kind of challenges does your kite, a bird, have?
My challenge, I have to get up on some of the set pieces during the play, and so it's kind of hard for me to change levels throughout the play because I have other people coming up there with me. I have to get closer to the conversation. So that's kind of hard, especially when you have to be able to fly while doing it.
I see. So you have your arms out, you climb up on the set pieces, and you what, eavesdrop on other characters?
Yes, we do. I am actually out there almost the whole second act.
Wow.
It's kind of cool that, because in other shows, you really, depending on your character, you really don't get to see the whole show. But when you're kind of over there and you're just watching it and you're able to see, like when you're backstage, you're like, what's going on? What's going on? I get to actually see what's going on. So that was kind of cool.
Sure. And I have a feeling you've probably been in shows before.
I have been in shows since I was six.
Well, name a few.
I was in Sound of Music. I was one of the Von Trapp children.
Was that in Raytown?
That actually was a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
That was one of my second. That was my second show, and I was the little Marta, the second youngest. I've been in two of Michelle's shows before, an Irish folktale show, and then The Lost and Foundling, which she was on here before about.
Sure. Yeah. So. Did you pick her because she did such a good job?
I picked her because when she auditioned, she just nailed it. And actually, Patty and I discussed at one point with Evie breaking the gender barrier and having a girl Mowgli.
Okay.
It was a challenge between her and CJ.
I see.
So, but then we decided we should go with CJ.
Would you have her play it as a girl or would you have her play it as a boy?
I think we would have had her play it probably as a girl.
Hmm. How do you think? What do you think of that?
I think it would have been really fun.
We're talking about you like you're not even here.
I think it would have been really fun. I have been supporting leads before, but I've never been like the actual lead.
Right.
Before, so that would have been really fun. But you know, I'm not like 18, so there's a lot more for me to do.
Not
like this is my last show.
That's right. No, you're not 18. Right. What are you? Shouldn't ask a woman her age, I guess.
She has a few years left in our children's shows. But, yeah, she's a great little actress, and I think she's got a lot of potential. That's one of the reasons we picked her.
Okay.
A lot of people say, like, acting's really embarrassing because you have to go on stage and do something that you know, you really don't feel comfortable doing, but acting's all about embarrassment, so
that's one reason I do it.
Okay, well, thank you. It'd be Grasinski.
Grasinski?
Yes. Okay, got it right finally. She's one of the kites, which is a bird in the show. That leaves us with Piper Brown, mm-hmm. a wolf. Tell us about your wolf.
Well, my character is Mowgli's adoptive sister, or other sister. And she basically protects him and tries telling him that he's a man and, like, helping him, I guess, decide between the jungle and the village. Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to get him into the wolf mindset. Does he have to grow into the wolf mindset? How does the law of the jungle work in that respect? It's eat or be eaten, one of you said earlier.
I think that actually in the story, Mowgli needs to grow more into the man mindset because he's grown up as a wolf. But instinctively, he's different. And so the two girls who play the sister wolves are somewhat supportive of him finding that other place where mm-hmm. he could fit. But then the youngest sister, who's not with us today, she's kind of the taunting little sister who is, you know, always glad to point out how different he is.
Okay. Now, have we covered everybody?
We have.
We have covered everybody. So it sounds like it could be interchangeable with their animals, mm-hmm. but it could be people under different circumstances,
right.
learning their way if they have an important function to fulfill in life.
Yes. Yes. And I think that the jungle laws that Evie talked about and that Victoria talked about are lessons that we all need as we all grow up. And I think still are things that, as an adult even, I'm trying to make sure that I learn and live by.
Of course, yeah. It sounds like it might be difficult with so many. I asked your colleague this question earlier. Do you feel like you have to keep it organized or have help keeping it organized?
Patty is, like, so awesome with keeping me on track and keeping me organized. And if I come up with some, like, hey, let's do this, and she's like, no, we can't manage that.
No,
so
no.
She helps to keep me grounded and realistic, which is good with this group because, keeps me under control. That's right. Because we have... I do. We have so many talented kids in this show. We had 60 kids show up to audition for 30 roles.
Yeah.
So we really got to pick
the cream of the crop.
That's yeah. Right. And
I was trying to think of a wolf metaphor, but
yeah. So there's we wanted
the head of the pack.
Yeah. We wanted there's just so many things that these kids can do, and they're so amazingly willing to step outside their comfort zone and do whatever we ask them to do that it's just easy to keep going, okay, we could add this and we could add that, and Patty's like, no. You need to keep it realistic. Here's what we can manage in the time and the technology that we have.
Yeah.
So that's always a good thing to have with you to help you get a successful show on the stage.
Sure. Now I have to ask, what about costuming?
Oh, my gosh. Costuming is so cool. We decided in a moment of craziness that we were going to have all original costumes. And so we called our friend Kara Taylor and said, hey, Kara, will you help us with this show? And we're not going to reuse anything, and we have 30 kids. What can you do? And she has, like, stepped up and put together some of the most amazing costumes.
They're really cool. She's really creative.
Yeah, she's really good at what she
And
does.
What I'm amazed at is she doesn't use a pattern.
Mm. She's
just
like, okay, measure, cut. Like, she would come on the stage and she's like, okay, I need you to put your arms out. And she's like, okay. And
then you stop like, the show for it.
No, you just say a line. I'm just doing this because she didn't have, like, any patterns.
Yeah, and so they're just fabulous. I can't wait.
Now, Evie, when you're a bird, do you have feathers?
No.
No?
And I'm very glad of it.
Okay.
I would not like to have feathers.
Oh.
They get all over the stage and make a big mess.
Like a feather boa, but our wings are really fragile, so we have to be careful.
As a wolf, do you?
Kara would get so mad.
As a wolf, do you have fur?
Yes, lots and lots of fur, and it's really, really hot, and
all of the fur. And we have a tail, which it's, like, awkward to sit on because you have to, like, situate it before we sit down. It's just really...
Is it a problem with the other actors pulling your tail? Be honest.
They don't really touch my tail.
Okay, they better not.
They'd get in trouble if they did.
Boy, a cast of 30 in The Jungle Book. Going to open this Friday at the Blue Springs City Theater. Opens Friday the 9th at 7:30 p.m. Then Saturday the 8th also at 7:30. And a matinee is on Sunday, every Sunday, at 2 o'clock p.m. Then next week, Friday evening, Saturday evening, also Saturday afternoon on the 15th at 2 o'clock p.m. And then a Sunday afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. All at the Blue Springs City Theater, 2000 Northeast or Northwest, I should say, 2000 Northwest Ashton Drive. That's the campus of the Blue Springs High School. The number to call for more information is 816-228-0134 and online at bluespringscitytheater.com to see The Jungle Book, part of the Blue Springs City Theater's regular schedule. How many shows about do they do every year?
We are doing 4 shows this year. We're doing The Jungle Book. Annie will be our summer musical. The Dixie Swim Club will be our fall show. And then at Christmas time, we're doing It's a Wonderful Life, the musical.
Wow.
Another big cast.
I'll bet so. It would have to be. All at the Blue Springs City Theater in Blue Springs, Missouri. Blue Springs is one of the fastest growing communities in the area. Blue Springs or Green Valley or Lee Summit. I guess they kind of change positions around there, but you're in a good spot to pick up the theater audience, the community theater audience.
And we get to pull kids from all of those communities as well to be on our stage, so that's great too.
Well, you might have 90 audition next time for 20 spots. And then what are you going to do, Michelle?
I think she'll go crazy.
Right. Probably goes crazy now. I want to thank all my guests for being with us. Michelle Brown, the director, Patty Barris, the assistant director, C.J. Miller, who plays the role of Mowgli, Victoria McGuire, who plays one of the kites. That is a bird that kind of spies. I got that opinion. Caitlin Burrows, who is one of the wolves. Evie Grasinski, who plays a kite, one of the birds. And Piper Brown, also one of the wolves in the Blue Springs City Theater production of Jungle Book, which opens this Friday the 7th at 7:30 in Blue Springs. Thank you so much, all of you, for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You want to give us a growl before we go? Or?
A growl.
I love it. When we return from our break... Yiddish vaudeville. I'm looking forward to this. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Son of God is a feature film about the life of Christ that's been distilled from footage from the recent hit TV miniseries The Bible that was produced by reality TV icon Mark Burnett and his wife Roma Downey. Although reverent and well-intentioned, it likely will receive some criticism from biblical purists. Also, it's excised footage of Satan because the actor who portrayed the Prince of Darkness in the TV miniseries looked a bit too much like President Obama. Portuguese actor Diogo Morgado gives an effective performance as Jesus, and the film establishes a devout tone. But the greatest story ever told has been told much better in a number of previous films. The Son of God is dutiful, but uninspired. Famed Japanese animator Hayao Miyazaki's latest and perhaps last work, The Wind Rises, is a beautifully rendered, old-school, hand-drawn work that's a nominee for this year's Best Animated Feature Oscar. It tells the fictionalized story of a real-life Japanese man who designed aircraft for the Imperial Empire, including the Mitsubishi A6M-0. A huge hit in Japan, the film has generated some controversy from both the political left and right, but it's non-political in content. It's a personal story and a tearjerker that focuses on the fulfillment of dreams. The version currently being shown in Kansas City area theaters is the English language version featuring voice work by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Emily Blunt, John Krasinski, Elijah Wood, William H. Macy, and Stanley Tucci. In the interest of full disclosure, the version that I saw was subtitled. The Wind Rises is a bit slow-moving and overlong, so it's really not a cartoon for kids, but it's an impressive showcase of visual storytelling by a master of the craft. Also opening this week, Nonstop is the latest action-adventure thriller starring middle-aged backside kicker Liam Neeson. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
Wednesday night is Arts Night on KKFI. At 6 p.m., it's Art Speak Radio, followed by the award-winning From Arc to Microchip at 6:30. Then it's live radio theater on L.A. Theater Works from 7 to 9 p.m., followed by chamber music with Dr. Mike. Get your arts on Wednesday night on KKFI.
We also have Arts On right now. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to have some fun with you now. Yeah, I had to admit I had not heard of specifically Yiddish vaudeville before, but I'm very happy to have you on so I can learn more about it. Sounds very entertaining. Two of our guests from the Jewish Community Center of Kansas City are with us as well. Krista Blackwood is with us as well. And Shane Bertram Baker, the performer in The Big Bupkis, a Complete Gentile's Guide to Yiddish Vaudeville.
Easy for you to say.
Is it just as easy for you to say? Are you Jewish?
No, I'm not.
That's what I heard.
I'm not really a Yiddish actor. I just play one on the stage.
That's right. You have a one-man show. At least I gather that it's a one-man show.
Well, for this one-man show, it takes about five people
to put
it together, but I'm the one who gets the spotlight, yes.
All right. It's happening this Saturday, March the 8th at 7:30 p.m., and again on Sunday afternoon, the 9th of March at 2 o'clock p.m. at the White Theater on the campus of the Jewish Community Center. How fitting that you would be performing there.
In more ways than one. When I was a kid growing up here in Kansas City, my mother used to send me to the Jewish Community Center in the summers to take magic classes. We used it for the swimming pool, of course. It wasn't restricted, so they allowed Gentiles in, and we made good use of that.
Was that the one that was in between Troost and Holmes?
Yes, indeed.
I did a couple of shows down there in those days. I wonder if we saw each other in the hall in those days.
My memory is weak, so I couldn't say for sure.
But you know a whole show, Shane. Shane Bertram Baker, if I didn't give you a proper introduction later. Non-Jewish, native Kansas Cityan, went to New York to immerse yourself in Yiddish theater.
That's correct. I always had an interest in theater growing up here in Kansas City, and we had in our neighborhood an old vaudevillian. I talk about him some on stage there, H. Claude Enslow, and he was an early radio celebrity here in Kansas City as well. He had a kids' show, Tim West, the Trail Scout, and later he moved that to TV as one of the early TV pioneers. But he was retired, and I used to spend my Saturday mornings over there learning about magic and vaudeville history from him. And then when I moved to New York, I decided I'd check out Yiddish theater because I knew it had a big influence on both the American stage and the world stage. And, of course, Yiddish humor is a huge part of American comedy as well. So I went to a Yiddish play there called Mirela Efros. It's the Jewish Queen Lear. And I fell in love with one of the actresses in particular and said, I wish I understood what they were saying. So I became friends with her, and she used to call me over to her place to change light bulbs.
I see.
And
sounds like things progressed for you.
Yes, indeed. She'd feed me herring and chicken soup, and she taught me to speak Yiddish. Mina Byrne was her name.
Ah, sounds exciting. Now, how does an altar boy from St. Andrews here in the area develop a fascination for vaudeville? Was it because this woman got you started in her culture?
Well, I had the interest in vaudeville. I mean, as far as the St. Andrews angle goes, I also went to Calvary Lutheran School for my grade school and attended Bishop Miege High School. So it was pretty ecumenical coming in. It only made sense to go into something Jewish, I thought.
Yeah.
Well, Krista's doing the face palm there. But,
did you agree with this?
Well, you know, I have history and roots at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church, and I worked at Presbyterian churches and Catholic churches growing up, so it only makes sense. Jewish is what's left, so that's why I'm out there.
And let's face it, Yiddish is a big part of things at St. Andrew's. They have, you know, they're in the acolytes room. We spoke almost exclusively Yiddish. Amongst ourselves.
The acolytes room, I love that. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming and telling us about this. Boy, cheap jokes, magic tricks, ukulele music, hypnotism, that sounds especially good, a Yiddish bullfight poem, and a live onstage beheading. In the interest of disclosure, I was once in a live beheading on stage myself. I was the beheading.
Very
and that's
good.
That's why you're now on radio, right?
It's good to know
you've been
you have
divested of your head.
Well, you see these marks right here, Krista? That's where they reattach.
Nice. You can't see this listening audience, but it's true. It's there.
There are certain tricks to it, of course, which I can't pass on because I was sworn to secrecy.
You cannot reveal. That's right. The Magicians Union would be out after you in no time at all.
You're the Magicians Union by any chance?
No, but I was a longtime member of, there's no union per se, but there is the International Brotherhood of Magicians here in town, Ring 129, and I got an award from them one year, many, many years ago, and I still keep in touch with a few of the guys. Terry Elton, who was out there at the Wizard's Tower for many years at the Renaissance Festival. He's been helping me out with this. And Rod Seip, too, who appears there at the Renaissance Festival. I still keep in touch with these guys. I'm good friends with them.
Yeah, I once saw George Burns in person at Arrowhead Stadium. He was in a big show. It wasn't just him. It was a bunch of performers all involved in the show. And a lot of his routine talked about traveling the Catskills and playing at various places. Is that kind of vaudeville? Did that kind of spurn Yiddish vaudeville? Or did Yiddish vaudeville kind of lead the way and the other vaudeville evolved from that?
Well, at least in New York, and I'm sure in a lot of the major cities back east, when vaudeville was a going concern, let's say from the 1880s up through the 1930s, it only made sense for the various ethnic groups to have their own variety theaters. And the origins of this show is in a program at the Eldridge Street Synagogue in New York City. They wanted to have an examination of ethnic vaudeville. So they had someone to speak about Irish vaudeville. There was Irish-American vaudeville, even though that was in English primarily. Mm-hmm. There was an Italian vaudeville circuit back east, and of course a Yiddish vaudeville circuit, which flourished a little bit longer than the others did because there was no Yiddish TV to kill it off. There was some Yiddish radio, but that wasn't as bad a threat. And I lectured there, and a friend of mine, Alan Lewis Rickman, who's best known as the Yiddish star of A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie, he and his wife Yelena kill off Five-ish Finkel in the prologue, came to see that, and he was working with the theater, the New Yiddish Rep, and he and David Mandelbaum said, we need a show about Yiddish vaudeville. And so they took all of this stuff that I'd learned from Claude and things I'd learned from Mina Byrne and also from Luba Kadison and Five-ish Finkel, who's the last of the big stars of old Yiddish vaudeville who's still around. And we put that all together in this show. And, as far as traveling, we do travel. We have to reach the county line before the sheriff catches us. And that's why we keep on the road.
That's right. I imagine you would have to. Now, some people say, I understand this show, Yiddish, is Yiddish to Hebrew what, say, Brooklynese is to English?
It's more like what Chinese is to egg rolls.
Okay. I'm just setting
Yiddish
you up. That's all I'm doing.
Yiddish is written with
great man.
Yiddish is written with the Hebrew alphabet primarily, but it's a Germanic language in the same family as English and modern High German. And as far as understanding it, we do have super titles above the stage. Nice. And those are written so that people who don't understand Yiddish get just as good a show as the people who who do understand Yiddish. In fact, Alan and I have worked on them and refined them to the degree that people who understand Yiddish might enjoy watching them just to catch what we've done with the translations as much as the people who speak only English.
Well, the subtitle of the show is The Big Bupkis, A Complete Gentile's Guide to Yiddish Vaudeville. Bupkis, I had to take the time to look up Bupkis. It means, well, if you don't know Bupkis, then you know nothing at all. You know zip, you know zero, you know nada.
That's right. Bupkis is nothing, but nothing is something because Bupkis means nothing. So that's the something that Bupkis means.
Yeah, what are some of the other terms we hear that actually have their derivation?
Garnished. We talk about garnished in the show. Garnished, garnet. It means nothing.
Okay.
A krenk, a sickness. In Yiddish you say a krenk, a krenk. In fact, there's a story about a husband and wife who are fighting a little bit. It shouldn't happen to any of your listeners.
Of course not.
He's a very mild fellow, but she's got a bit of a sharp tongue. So he comes home and he says, "Nu, Rivka, what did you make for dinner tonight?" And she says, "A krenk, I made you a krenk." It means a sickness, nothing. She says, "A krenk I made." He says, "So, enjoy in good health."
That's right. Now, I know from Seinfeld, watching Seinfeld, you probably get a kick out of watching that yourself, some of the terminology and things. But I remember in the episode where Elaine was dating a Jewish man, they referred to her as a, I hope I pronounce this right, Shitska.
Okay.
Krista should know. She might hear it daily.
Right? I do. Absolutely. I'm the tall shiksa of the Jewish community. So.
I see. That means a lone woman?
A non-Jewish woman, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Is there a counterpart to that if you're a man? And
sure, a shegetz or a schkotz.
Oh, okay.
Either will do. It basically means a lobster.
I did not know that.
There you go.
I'm red as a lobster now.
No. As long as if you were red as a beet, you'd be kosher. But
I love some of these terminologies. More.
More. Yes. Well, you know, so much comes out of Yiddish. It's got, I think there's about 1,000 or more words that will appear in any American English dictionary, but we have a segment where we talk about nu that we do on some of the shows. I'm sure most people have heard nu, which means so, among other things. Oi, bagel is from Yiddish. There are so many words that we don't realize are in the lexicon, but aside from the words that have made it into English, Yiddish is a very full and complete language. In the 1930s, there were botanical and economic textbooks published all in Yiddish. And so anyone who'd like to go further with it, you know, hook up with Krista or with me. We can tell you about the Yiddish group that meets here, and you'll hear the full gamut of Yiddish words. It's quite a lovely language. There's some beautiful modernist poetry in it, some of which we use in the show, and of course the traditional cheap jokes and unpleasant words that I signed a waiver I wouldn't say here on your show.
You got some schmutz on your face there.
There you go. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of words to begin with SH in Yiddish. Mm-hmm. The prettiest word is of course Shane, which Shane, my name Shane, in English rhymes with pain and insane, as any fifth grader will tell you. But in Yiddish, it's a schön Wort. It's a pretty word because it means pretty, beautiful, handsome. Well, I mean, look over here and you'll see what I mean.
Oh, I absolutely would disagree a bit.
They told me before I came on I had a face made for radio.
Yeah,
so.
I could tell that all the time.
No.
We're speaking with Shane Bertram Baker, Krista Blackwood as well. But Shane is the performer in The Big Bupkis, A Complete Gentile's Guide to Yiddish Vaudeville, with two performances coming up this weekend, Saturday, March the 8th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday the 9th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Jewish Community Center of Kansas City in the White Theater down there. It's located at 5801 West 115th Street in Overland Park. If you map quest things, 66211 is the zip code. The number to call for more information is 913-327-8054 or on the web at jcckc.org/ Big Bupkis?
Big Bupkis. B-U-P-K-I-S. Bupkis.
Bupkis.
Yeah.
Well, I think we can all imagine what that is short for. What we shouldn't say.
What a memory this man has. He recited all of that with no cards.
Oh, no, I have cards all over the place. I have one for you, too. We're speaking with Shane. Boy, was trained as a magician at a young age. What was that like?
It was like I can't compare it to anything. I started out probably in eighth grade, and I don't know how good I was, but with Claude's help and Terry Elton's help, I became quite good at the routines that I still use today. I'm still flogging those same old tricks, and I use a few of them in the show. They're so old, they're new. I recently did a set over in Williamsburg for all the hipsters who were presenting a new folk opera, and folks were coming up to me after saying, gosh, that was a lot of fun. How did you come up with that? And little did they realize that I was using 100-year-old material.
Well, everything old is new again, right?
I've got jokes from the great influenza epidemic of 1918.
And do you work them in the show?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. That's some of the best material that I do. Everything's downhill after the great influenza epidemic of 1918.
I'd love to hear about it. It says here, an anarchist puppet troupe.
Yes. I worked with Great Small Works on a Sicilian-style marionette show, which is quite violent, about the rapture. And I played, among other characters, Susan Sontag. That was my main figure that I operated, who battled with the devil at the end of the show.
So did Susan win?
I think both of us lost. It was a Pyrrhic victory. It was a Pyrrhic victory, but they've not used that puppet since. I told them they'd pry it out of my cold, dead hands.
Isn't it amazing how the puppet characters can say things that the performer can't? I've noticed that, especially with ventriloquist. Well, the one that comes first to mind is Paul Winchell. He had a series of mannequin puppets that he used, and Winchell would say pretty much normal, straight lines, and it's the puppet that was controversial. He said controversial things that Winchell himself probably would have gotten trouble for, which is ironic because both were his voices.
I've got the filthiest little puppet in this show. You wouldn't believe he's got a mouth on him. I'm going to have to wash it out with soap, probably.
That's right.
Yeah, well, he makes all of these innuendos that I don't understand half of them, but Krista's
you
laughing.
You can't make this stuff up.
Someone did.
Right?
But the puppets, I guess my point is, the puppets can get away with more controversial things than the actual human performer can.
This may be true. This actually may be true. Seinfeld had an episode or talked at length about puppets as well. But this one, I don't know what to do with him. I can't get rid of him, and I can't keep his mouth shut. But
that's
right. Michael, yeah.
They tend to talk whenever they want to and say whatever they want.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a little bit of everything in this show. We've got Michael, the ventriloquist figure. He doesn't like the term puppet or dummy.
Oh, I see.
He thinks that those are discriminatory, so we call
well,
him
probably
a figure. And we've got, we'll see if the trained dog makes it out this time, but I do have trained goldfish, Comet and Cupid.
Wow.
Comet and Cupid. We've got on the piano, we've got Steve Sterner, who is the foremost silent film accompanist in New York City these days.
Get a lot of work, does he?
Yes, he does. In fact, he's getting so much work, I'm going to have to fire him and take someone else. He keeps asking for more and more. It's killing me. We've got a lot going in. It's a real kitchen sink show, and I do think that Yiddish vaudeville is a little bit like Levy's Rye, if you remember those old commercials. You don't have to be Jewish to enjoy it. Of course,
yeah.
It doesn't hurt, but
I think
this is a show for everyone, as long as they can read, because you do have to be able to follow the super titles.
Yeah, ukulele music? Did you play the ukulele?
Well, if you call what I do playing, yes, I play the ukulele.
Did you always play? Is that something you had to? I doubt that you had ukulele lessons around here. Maybe so.
Well, I used to play the wax paper and comb, but they took the comb away from me, so I had to find something else.
Hypnotism. Hypnotism. Some people don't believe that's real.
I'm hypnotized right now.
Really? Mesmerized. You look mesmerized.
I am.
I thought she was just nodding off, but I'll take that as an answer.
Do you hypnotize someone from the audience by any chance?
Well, we could do that, but there are various legal requirements. So we have a special somnambulistic subject that everyone will be introduced to there on the spot.
Oh, yeah, magic.
I have been known to put the audience to sleep at various times,
however.
Ah,
well, however. See, that's yeah. And you could wake them up and they would think that they had seen the show.
Pat Buchanan said that this was the best nap that he ever got in the last 10 years. That was his review.
I'm glad he enjoyed it. It's nice to know that. Boy, cheap jokes, as you said, magic tricks. Is it a lot of ethnic humor? Are you having fun with the Jewish people?
Well, the humor is Jewish humor, so I don't know. Ethnic humor implies maybe making fun of, although Jewish humor tends to be a little bit self-deprecatory and
I've noticed that.
Whatnot, but this is genuine Yiddish humor, which is the soul of a lot of our American humor, and I think that people will get belly laughs, knee slappers, and guffaws out of this show. And if they don't, I promise that I'll refund their 75 minutes.
Give it back to them.
That's right. Give it right back to them. You know, Raymond Smullyan, the great mathematician, was working on some formula to save ethnic humor, which kind of died out in the age of political correctness, and he came up with the idea that he would use generic ethnic whatever in place of things. So he tells a story, for instance, there are these two generic ethnic types who are walking to their generic ethnic houses of worship on their respective generic ethnic day of worship, and they pass by each other as they're walking down the street. And one turns to the other and says, "So Moshe, how come you go to that synagogue?" I don't know if that crosses over into the line of Yiddish humor or not, but it's...
I think so. At the end of your credits, it says, "An authority on the place of Henry Fielding." How does that fit in?
Well, I was drinking heavily back in the early 90s, and I came across The Life and Death of Tom Thumb the Great, which it was recommended to me by Peter Sellers of the Los Angeles Festival at the time. Not the dead actor, but the living director. And I kind of fell in love with that, and so I staged that and said, it's a very fun political satire from the 18th century that seemed oddly enough to fit in with things that were happening there in the 90s. And then I took that and decided that it would be even more fun to stage the historical register for the year 1736. So we got that one up, too, and it seemed to fit the times. All that changed was the names and locations, oddly enough, but the political humor was there. And I staged about three more of Fielding's plays over the course of 10 years, and then I gave up and turned to a really burgeoning field with lots of room for growth, Yiddish theater.
Lots of room for growth, I would think. But I'll bet popular with those who want to see it.
Popular with those who want to see it. If that isn't the circumlocution, I don't know what is.
A man of lots of words and substance I often don't have a lot of. Lots of words, but low on substance. Shane Bertram Baker. The name of the show is The Big Bupkis, A Complete Gentile's Guide to Yiddish Vaudeville. This Saturday, the 8th of March at 7:30 p.m. Sunday afternoon, the 9th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Jewish Community Center's White Theater, 5801 West 115th Street. The number to call for more information, 913-327-8054, or online at jccc.org/bigbupkis. Bupkis, of course, is nothing. Zip. Zero. Nada. You know Bupkis.
Sam, meaning poison.
That's right.
Kadochis, which means a fever. That's also nothing.
Yeah, he's a native Kansas Cityan. The show will be cheap jokes, magic tricks, ukulele music, and cheap jokes was...
Underlined?
No, it was in the publicity. That's not my interpretation.
Who put that in there?
Cheap jokes, magic tricks, ukulele music, hypnotism, a Yiddish bullfight poem, and a live on-stage beheading. So, what could you ask for more than that?
Well, I won't be hypnotizing a volunteer from the audience, but I will be beheading a volunteer from the audience.
Oh, boy. You're in for really something. Thanks so much for being here. Shane Bertram Baker in the Big Bupkis, a one-man Yiddish vaudeville show this weekend at the White Theater on the campus of the Jewish Community Center. And I also want to thank Krista Blackwood, who came and still didn't have much to say.
I just came to hang out, but I'm glad you've been here.
She's responsible. She's the one who booked me. Blame her.
I'm the one who did it. So when he's out of town and you need your 75 minutes refunded, you'll have to call me. I'm looking forward. You won't want your 75 minutes refunded.
The country and Kansas City's just, even though Kansas City's your native area?
Yes, we've hit various locations, everything from Montreal to Stockholm to the Shalom Club at the Four Seasons of Metetekonk Lakes, New Jersey.
Wow, so you wander around much like the Jewish people did in earlier times.
That's right, scratching my head and krechzen.
Thanks so much for being here. I was entertained immensely by your answers to my questions.
By his shtick.
By his shtick. Oh, that's good.
There you go.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having us, Krista. Was it a pleasure to be had?
Always.
The Jazz Insider is next, a man who might well have questions for you. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station. And how much more of the community could I serve? Your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoge. We'll see you next time.